started to claim that it was actually Antifa. This was carried out by Trump supporters who were fired up by Trump himself and by other extremist groups.
Finally, apparently Fox News will not be running this live, but maybe doing it as, quote, news warrants. And the significance of that, that some in the population will see this, others will not. That this is just the beginning of eight, and who the audience is. I mean, the American public, Merrick Garland, the question of whether the attorney general will move further and criminally perhaps indict President Trump. You have 20 seconds.
Well, first, I will just say that, yes, Fox is running counter-programming and that it will be held by Tucker Carlson. And we know what type of news commentator Tucker Carlson is. So he will deflect and claim that that this is a witch hunt. But I just want to go back and say the bottom line to these hearings is that it will provide voters with a choice between those who want to continue to defend free and fair elections and those who want to take away the will of the people.
Kristen Durer, we want to thank you for being with us, managing editor of Right Wing Watch. Tomorrow, we will bring you excerpts of the hearing tonight. I'm Amy Goodman with the Marie Shake.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an atmospheric rivers moving in, bringing a threat of flooding to our area. A local grocery is lawyering up with a law firm that's busted unions in the past. And big rallies are planned in Oregon, Washington, and all across the country, demanding that lawmakers take action to stop gun violence.
Mobilization around the country, coming together to say enough is enough.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 9th, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. An atmospheric river has started pushing into Washington. Forecasters expect it to descend into Oregon, bringing with it a long period of heavy rain that'll last throughout the weekend. Atmospheric rivers are a weather phenomenon consisting of a narrow corridor or filament of concentrated moisture, usually traveling along boundaries between large areas of divergent airflow. Meteorologists are saying this weekend's incoming storm is unusually strong. They expect it to bring more than an inch of rain to the western valleys and coastal regions, reaching to as much as 4 inches of rain within just 2 days. Most atmospheric rivers that hit the Northwest usually show up during the winter months, making this weekend's Category 4 storm front even more unusual. This will make a soggy bookend for Portland's Rose Festival activities, mirroring the rain that hit last weekend's Starlight Parade. New Seasons appears to be fighting back against unionizing efforts at its Oregon stores. KBOO's Jeffrey Wade has more on this story.
Portland upscale grocery store New Seasons hired a national firm this week in efforts to deter revitalized workers' efforts to unionize the stores. New Seasons hired a lawyer with Ogletree, Deacons, Nash, Smoke, and Stewart to represent the company in the face of two union efforts at both a Portland and Hillsboro location. These renewed efforts prompted response from New Seasons CEO Nancy Liebold to release a long letter to workers to arouse distrust in union campaigns and strong advisements against against unionizing. It now seems clear the grocery chain, which is owned by a global retail company, Emart's West Coast-based Good Food Holdings, is doubling down on its anti-union tactics with a legal strategy. The national law firm hired has previously gained notoriety by helping fight union organizing at various Trump-owned companies with clear intent to impede the labor movement. Ogletree Deakins was used to fight unionizing efforts at Donald Trump's Atlantic City casino and hotel before it shuttered under bankruptcy in 2016. The firm has also made a name for itself by primarily representing right-wing politicians and organizations, including Arizona's former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the Republican National Committee, and more recently Amazon, to fight a union campaign among its delivery drivers and by Lyft to quash its own drivers' union efforts. Powell's Books also hired Ogletree Deakins in January to represent the company when the store's union accused Powell's of violating the National Labor Relations Act. New Seasons workers are using the law firm's previous affiliations to help fuel support for unionizing efforts. Store workers distributed flyers in break rooms with information about Ogletree Deakins' work history, with its bold header stating, quote, "Ogletree Deakins aligns itself with racists and anti-democratic efforts." Labor research experts say they are not surprised by the company hiring the anti-union law firm, citing the two stores in question are proposing different types of union campaigns. Workers at New Seasons' Southeast Division and 20th store campaign is entirely worker organized, while worker efforts at a store in Hillsborough's Orenco Station neighborhood are hoping to join the already established union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555. The University of Oregon's longtime director of Oregon's Labor Education and Research Center, Bob Bussell, notes that the current national climate regarding labor organizing will surely help New Seasons workers' union push. Commenting on the grocer's hiring of Ogletree Deakins, Bussell said, quote, "It's hard to know what this moment in labor history will become. The national level of approval for unions is at an all-time high. I would think in a place like Portland, workers that are organizing would find a supportive public," end quote. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
A driver is booked in the Multnomah County Detention Center facing charges of manslaughter and reckless driving after a horrific incident in Portland's Hazelwood neighborhood Tuesday. Portland police found a person lying in the road on Northeast 100 and Gleason that afternoon. Investigators figured out that someone driving a truck with a flatbed trailer hit a bicycle rider two blocks east at 102nd and Gleason, then dragged their body about 600 feet. They found the truck about 3.5 miles away. The suspect they arrested is 41-year-old Kenley Lebachi. The March for Our Lives movement will hold rallies all across the country this weekend, including several in Oregon and Southwest Washington. They'll demand that policymakers take action to reduce gun violence. As Mike Moen reports, this follows a string of mass shootings in states including Texas and New York.
As policymakers debate gun control laws in light of the latest mass shootings in the U.S., a youth-led organization is planning weekend demonstrations around the country to demand action. And events are planned in several Minnesota cities. This Saturday, March for Our Lives will host rallies in roughly 450 locations. The group was formed after the Parkland, Florida school shootings in 2018. Sean Layton of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers says America is unique in how it's routinely affected by gun violence. He adds demonstrators are determined to not let the latest incidents fade in the public's memory without substantive changes.
Our young people are bearing the brunt of this, and so we got to do things differently. And I think that's what this mobilization around the country coming together to say enough is enough. There needs to be and there will be political consequences for elected leaders who don't support gun control.
He will be at the Minneapolis rally. Other events are scheduled for Brainerd, St. Cloud, Rochester, and Albert Lea. Times and locations are on the group's website. Advocates are calling for action such as a federal ban on assault weapons and a national red flag law. Many Republicans argue there needs to be more security at schools and an emphasis on mental health. And while there are partisan divides, public polls show a majority of Americans want stronger gun laws. The latest calls follow the Texas school shooting that left 19 students dead. Lane says the issue plays out differently in communities around the U.S., noting the many young people who have been killed in Minneapolis away from school. He adds this weekend's rallies can keep the conversation going.
When you're trying to seek institutional change against an entrenched status quo, it can take time, and you got to stay at it and continue to talk to people about what they believe.
A larger rally will be held in Washington, D.C. on Saturday with several prominent speakers, as well as remarks from teachers and survivors of gun violence. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
In Oregon and Southwest Washington, there are at least 7 Marches for Our Lives events planned for this Saturday. In Portland, marchers will meet up at 11 a.m. at Portland State Urban Plaza between 5th and 6th Avenues. Another march is planned for Beaverton at 10 a.m. starting at the City Hall. Marchers will also gather at the Oregon State Capitol in Salem for a march starting at 4 p.m. and in Vancouver, they'll meet at 2 p.m. at 695 Waterfront Way. The Washington State Legislature set aside $144 million for nursing homes this fiscal year. Yet nursing home workers in the state say they are not getting the raises guaranteed through funds from the legislature at their facility in Renton. Eric Tegedoff talks to a certified nursing assistant about this issue.
Nursing home workers at a Washington state facility are calling on their employer to raise their wages with money set aside in the legislature's budget for that purpose. SEIU's 775 union members held an informational picket on Wednesday at the Arcadia Medical Resort of Talbot in Renton. The union says the facility isn't using $48 million from lawmakers this year aimed at raising pay at nursing homes. Linda Long is a certified nursing assistant at the facility. She spoke from the rally about working through the pandemic.
So many of our people have left the industry and went to different occupation because why work if you can't get paid? You're risking your life and they're not compensating it.
The informational picket drew a crowd of workers, as well as State Representative Mia Gregerson, a Democrat from SeaTac. Negotiations are ongoing between workers and Arcadia Medical Resort of Talbot. The facility did not return a request for comment before deadline. Long says the nursing home often is understaffed and people are overworked, which does a disservice to the residents who live there.
A lot of people live here and they need to know it's not their only last step in their life. They need to be able to know that they can enjoy any time they have left.
SEIU 775, the union representing workers, criticized the facility's $18 an hour proposal, saying it's below a livable wage in King County, where the cost of living is high. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Vancouver City Council voted unanimously this week to ban targeted protests at private residences and in residential neighborhoods. According to council members, they intend for this ordinance to crack down on targeted picketing or protesting outside the homes of individuals following recent complaints about harassment of city officials. Monday's announcement of the new ordinance also expands the list of noises and noise sources that can be considered public disturbances. This would empower the city to take legal action on behalf of officials, public employees, and others who are individually attacked by protests. During Monday's council public hearing, Chief Assistant City Attorney Nina Cook said of the ban, quote, it would allow the city to do things like seek a restraining order or an anti-harassment order against an alleged perpetrator. Council members maintain the ordinance would not ban noisemakers such as fireworks and air horns in commercial, industrial, or open spaces or at permitted events, but it would prohibit them in residential neighborhoods or near private residences. Public response to this ban was split, with detractors condemning the new ordinance, saying it restricts free speech and peaceful protest, while supporters arguing it will help stop targeted harassment and bullying, particularly from far-right groups. The unanimous vote follows challenges Vancouver has faced over the last few years, including an incident in 2021 where an anti-mask protest put 3 Vancouver schools in lockdown, resulting in a Clark County judge granting an injunction banning disruptive protests near campuses. Other cited incidents include 2 in 2020, in which agitated demonstrators protested outside the homes of 2 city attorneys after the city charged a business with violating Washington's pandemic stay-at-home orders. Fleet Week makes its return to Portland, and for the first time in 3 years, you can actually visit the ships. With more on this story, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
Fleet Week is back. The longtime Rose Festival tradition returns to Portland's waterfront for the first time since 2019. It was held virtually during the past 2 years because of the pandemic. This year's event runs through Monday, June 13th. Ships have been visiting Portland's waterfront since 1907. The Rose Festival is one of a few U.S. ports of call receiving courtesy visits from the U.S. Navy, U.S. Coast Guard, and the Royal Canadian Navy. As in years past, visitors will be able to take tours of the ships. Tickets are not required, and the tours are free. The U.S. Navy does require that people be fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Guests will also need to bring an ID, and they must wear closed-toe shoes. Bags, strollers, and wheelchairs are not allowed on board the ships. The Steele, Broadway, and Burnside bridges do rise for incoming ships, so driving delays were seen yesterday and today. The Morrison Bridge will not lift for any Fleet Week ship, but it may lift for other ships not associated with the event, according to Multnomah County. The ships depart on Sunday and Monday. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on international opposition to new U.S. military bases. Then at 6 o'clock, it's Rose City Native Radio. Tonight's weather, we'll see some steady rain this evening with showers continuing overnight. About half an inch expected, a low of 62 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, cloudy with periods of rain, another half inch total rainfall, a high of 68. And that rain will continue Friday night and into Saturday, lessening a bit, but then continuing again on Sunday. A high of 72 Saturday and 61 on Sunday. Today in history, on this date in 1973, Secretariat, the horse of the century, became a Triple Crown winner with a victory at the Belmont Stakes, the first horse to win all three major races, including the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes, since 1948. He is the only non-human ranked in ESPN's top 50 North American athletes. Our quote of the day is from Penny Chenery, the American sportswoman who bred and owned Secretariat. She said, "This is not about going back. This is about life being ahead of you, and you run at it, because you never know how far you can run unless you run." The first hearing for the January 6th committee is starting in prime time tonight. It will focus on far-right groups. The first hearing will feature an injured Capitol Police officer and a documentary filmmaker. The House committee has spent almost a year investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. It's conducted more than 1,000 interviews and poured over 140,000 documents. The committee is presenting its findings to the American public with a hearing tonight, and broadcast networks have cleared their primetime schedules to air it. This will be the first in a series this month intended to show evidence of what happened on the day of the attack and also in the 2 months before it, as then-President Donald Trump led an effort to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Committee Chairman Benny Thompson, a Democrat from Mississippi, and Vice Chairwoman Liz Cheney, Republican from Wyoming, are leading this evening's presentation. It will feature live testimony from Caroline Edwards. She's a U.S. Capitol Police officer who suffered serious injuries when rioters forced their way into the building. Nick Queston, the British filmmaker who documented activities of the Proud Boys, will also testify. And a Texas mass shooting survivor and victims' families testify before lawmakers. The Department of Justice launches a review of the incident. And police arrest an armed man outside U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's home. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And he went to there and shot my teacher and told my teacher goodnight and shot her in the head. And then he shot some of my classmates and the whiteboard.
Robb Elementary School student Mia Cerrillo testified Wednesday before House lawmakers on how she survived the mass shooting by smearing her classmates' blood over herself and pretending to be dead. The House Wednesday voted 223 to 204 to pass a package of gun control bills following the shootings in Buffalo and Uvalde. Zanita Everhart, whose son was killed in the mass shooting at Tops Market in Buffalo, New York, also testified.
I continuously hear after every mass shooting that this is not who we are as Americans and as a nation. Hear me clearly. This is exactly who we are.
Attorney General Merrick Garland announced Wednesday a group of investigators will review the police response to the mass shooting in Uvalde.
The review will culminate in a final report, which will include our findings and recommendations, and it will be made public.
The House has passed a resolution condemning the great replacement theory, less than a month after a gunman who reportedly espoused the racist conspiracy theory fatally shot 10 black people in Buffalo, New York. Ohio Congresswoman and chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Joyce Beatty.
We stand here united. We stand here representing our diversity because we understand that that diversity is our strength.
The conspiracy theory claims there is an effort underway to replace white Americans with people of color. Vice President Kamala Harris addressed the Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles Wednesday. She talked about addressing the root causes of migration in the Northern Triangle and said the focus should be on empowering women who face poverty and violence in their home countries.
From Canada to Chile, a prosperous region benefits all our economies and creates more opportunities for our people.
A California resident has been charged with attempted murder after he told officials he wanted to kill Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The suspect, 26-year-old California resident Nicholas John Roski, was arrested near the justice's Maryland home. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A first post-pandemic celebration kicks off in Alaska. A casino holds a Rutherford Falls event for Native youth, and a Native band celebrates the return of 28,000 acres sold by the U.S. government. With these stories and more, here's today's edition of National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Celebration, the every other year gathering of Indigenous people in Southeast Alaska, kicked off Wednesday in Juneau. Through Saturday, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people will participate in dances, art markets, and cultural demonstrations. This year's theme is celebrating 10,000 years of cultural survival. The Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell says the theme recognizes the many environmental, colonial, and more recently pandemic-related challenges they faced.
We knew that we were going to survive that. And I know our people suffered highly from it, but we still had the strong belief that we were going to survive. And sure enough, here we are, you know, 10,001 year later, and we're still here and prospering.
Indigenous people were disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 in Alaska, accounting for nearly a third of the deaths from the virus. That included many elders and some of the last remaining Native speakers for several languages. Hune Lance Twitchell says more action is needed at the state level to help preserve Native languages.
There's probably 19 languages that are still going right now. And I think in about 10 years, it'll be down to maybe 10, unless we do something.
Events began with the dedication of the Institute's new arts campus. Worrell says the facility will host classes aimed at preserving cultural practices and serve as the focal point of Northwest Coast Arts.
We've already had basket training classes there. We've had Tana training classes there. We've also had the big box drum training. So it's not even formally open, but our people are so anxious to use it that they've run in there and pushed things aside. And we've already had these 3 classes, and that's just the beginning.
There's also a new 360-degree totem pole. Worrell says it's the first of its kind in Alaska and represents the cultural values of the 3 main Indigenous groups of Southeast Alaska. The Pechanga Resort Casino in Temecula, California, is bringing cast and crew of the Peacock series Rutherford Falls to its casino Thursday. The event is for the Native community with a focus on Native youth. More than 100 Native young people from across Southern California are expected to attend. They'll be able to walk the red carpet and see a sneak peek of episodes before the new season premieres next week. Youth will also hear from actors, directors, and writers. Pechanga Tribal Chairman Mark Macaro says the event gives young people an opportunity to learn about the television and film industry.
To be able to engage cast and crew members, you know, on both sides of the camera and talk about career opportunities.
Rutherford Falls, a comedy about two friends, features Native actors, writers, and producers. Macaro says Native representation matters.
To really begin to shape and craft a narrative that is more in line with how I believe Indian tribes think a narrative should be when you're talking about Indian people, Indian communities, and tribes across the country.
The second season of Rutherford Falls premieres on June 16th. This week, the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa Indians in Minnesota celebrated the return of reservation land. The band purchased more than 28,000 acres from the Conservation Fund. According to the band, it's the largest restoration of its reservation since the allotment era. The land was taken by the federal government more than 100 years ago and sold to timber companies and homesteaders. Plans are underway for the band to manage and conserve the land while balancing economic and cultural benefits for the band and its members. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Studies show there's more than one gun for each of the 330 million Americans, and 110 people are killed each day from gun violence. Now, the Gun Violence Prevention Center of Utah will safely dismantle unwanted and unloaded firearms this weekend and turn them into garden tools. It's part of a national Guns to Gardens event on Saturday, as Mark Richardson reports.
Gun violence has become an epidemic across America, leaving many people frightened and wondering what can be done about it. A Utah group is taking action with a unique event this weekend to reduce the number of guns on the street. A nonprofit group is hosting a Guns for Gardens event Saturday, where Utahns who no longer want or need their guns can safely surrender them and go home with a new garden tool. Nancy Halden with the Gun Violence Prevention Center of Utah says they are taking the Bible verse to beat swords into plowshares literally and turning the firearms into garden implements.
We partnered with an organization out of Colorado called Raw Tools. What they do is take donated unwanted guns, dismantle them with a chop saw, and then they have a portable forge and they turn them into tools on the spot.
Halden says their version of the National Guns to Gardens event isn't likely to solve America's gun problem, but is a small step toward reducing the number of dangerous firearms. The event is Saturday afternoon at Grace Presbyterian Church in Sandy, Utah. She says the event is designed to prevent further gun violence from unwanted firearms in households where vulnerable children, adults, and the elderly reside, adding that Utah has one of the highest rates of suicide by gun and gun violence in domestic disputes.
As the number of gun owners has gone up, gun violence has gone up. Addition to that, here in Utah, they passed permitless carry. So you had a lot of first-time gun buyers buying guns because they were afraid and they're not trained.
She says in addition to hosting events like Guns to Gardens, the Gun Violence Prevention Center works to inform and encourage sensible gun ownership.
We're trying to educate those people who choose to have guns about responsible gun ownership, and those people who no longer want their guns, we're trying to urge them to get those guns out of their homes.
Halden says they plan to host similar events in other parts of the state. For more information on Guns to Gardens, go to gvpc.org. I'm Mark Richardson for Utah News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 9, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Jeffrey Wade, Josh Salem, Eric Tegedoff, Mike Moen, and Mark Richardson. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for listening. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, taking a look at international opposition to new U.S. military bases. That's coming up next.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth on KBOO Portland. We've got two interviews for you this evening, both related to United States military actions abroad. First, over 30 military experts and organizations of varying political stripes recently sent an open letter to the Biden administration and Congress opposing any new U.S. military bases and armed forces in Europe. The letter said that such a buildup would be wasteful and damaging to national security. It offered other ways for the U.S. to support Ukraine and protect European security in response to the Russian invasion. David Vine is a professor at American University and the author of Base Nation, How U.S. Military Bases